My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Justin Collings. And joining me once again, he is a returning guest to the show. He is a proud representative of Western Massachusetts. He's our Springfield, Massachusetts correspondent. He's also the number one ranked fencer in the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network. I bet you a lot of people didn't know that. But it is New Japan expert Jay Michael.
Hi, Jesse. Thank you for having me back after a year. Had a long year. God damn, we got a lot to talk about.
When was the last year? Yeah, but first we're going to talk about Western Mass. When was the last time you were at Big Y?
Yep. When last time I was at Big Y?
Yeah.
Yesterday. Of course.
Cool.
And I was there Sunday too, so I've been there 2 days in a row. Broke the streak today, though.
I go by every time I go into work, I go by a big billboard that's advertising the Big E to me. But I'm actually going to be in Los Angeles for like the entire duration of the Big E. So I will not be able to eat like my fried cheese on a stick. And I think the kid Laori is coming to the Big E. I believe he's big in the hip hop scene. I would have no idea, but that's who their headlining act is, according to the billboard on 290.
Interesting. Well, you know, Jesse, I was telling you about some local history before we recorded. I'll give you a little bit
more.
We
had the nerdiest conversation ever before it was recorded.
Not the nerdiest, because we're about to break that record, because the Big E, like, it's the template for everything, right? And it is a real agricultural fair, right? You go and you got the thing with the eggs hatch and all the big giant...
Yeah, for people who don't know, this is like a big state fair that takes place in Springfield, Massachusetts, every year.
West Springfield.
Oh, yeah, you're right. It's in the fairgrounds are actually in West Springfield. Sorry.
That's right, across the river. Yeah, and it's got like, it's meant to be like a New England thing. So there's state houses for every state, and like everybody lines up for like 3 days to get the main potato and all that stuff. But, you know, and everybody sort of copied it, right? So there's the big Wisconsin one, there's the big Texas one, all these fucking states that have nothing to do have these big ones. But the very first agricultural fair, Jesse, was in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, 1807.
Really? I did not know that. Chitty Pitty was the home of the first agricultural fair?
It was, right under the big Pittsfield Elm, downtown Pittsfield. It was right there, 1807. And the first agricultural society was started right after that.
Hell yeah, brother. Anyway, it's been enough of that nerd talk. We're going to talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, something that only sophisticated jocks like ourselves
Hold on. Whoa. I got one more provincial thing. I've been waiting for this to drop this on you. So last time I was on, obviously the Celtics had just won the championship, and we're talking about how they have all of theirs, and the Lakers had five because they don't really have as many as they say. So
yes, the Lakers claim the Minneapolis ones, which any sane nonsense. Person would not recognize. Yeah,
nonsense. Well, let me tell you about people who are claiming stuff. Now, I don't know how often you've been to 91, But you know, when I get on 91 and I'm going south and I cross the border, there's the big sign that says "Welcome to Connecticut." But there's been a recent addition, like last year or two, and it literally says "Welcome to Connecticut, home of the basketball capital of the world." What the fuck do you make of that?
So Connecticut is the basketball. So it doesn't tell you what the basketball capital of the world is,
I'm guessing
which I'm.
UConn, but
It's so it wants you to think of Storrs, Connecticut, which is home to UConn because it has the women's basketball program and then also very successful men's basketball program.
yes,
I would say if
I
you were
believe so.
to, if you were to survey like 500 people at random. In this country, and ask like, what would you recognize as like the basketball capital of the world? I don't think many people would say Connecticut. I think you'd get Indiana, maybe New York City, maybe like a few other major cities. Some people might say Springfield because it's invented
Sure would.
basketball and it's home to the Hall of Fame, which I'm sure the Basketball Hall of Fame is very closely located to that billboard.
Like a mile.
Yeah, based on your
Oh, they're trolling
description.
us for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, so they're def so you think they're trolling the Basketball Hall of Fame?
I think so. I think they're trolling all of us. You know, Jesse, I tend to put precedent on professional accomplishments, not amateur accomplishments. So obviously, basketball capital would be just the state of Massachusetts.
Yeah, well, here's the thing is that college sports are not big in Massachusetts. Certainly not where I live. The exception is
No.
the Bean Pot, which is the ice hockey tournament between four colleges that are in Boston, except only two of the colleges actually are in Boston, but it's Boston
Right.
College, which isn't in Boston, Boston University,
No.
Northeastern, and Harvard, which is also not in Boston. But that's like the only time like people care about college sports. Like I think like BC alums care about Boston College, but nobody outside of BC really cares about that. In Worcester,
Yeah.
there's like some Holy Cross fans that I see. But like college sports are like not a non-thing in Massachusetts. And I always say when people mention that, I say we have professional teams that win things. So we don't have to watch these amateurs play an
No.
inferior version of these sports. But I understand in flyover country there that college sports is a big deal.
Well, and you know, Connecticut's almost flyover country for me too. I was here's a really provincial thing. So, I mean, you've sort of done it enough. I went from, you know, Western Mass to Providence, and you know that spot before like Sturbridge, where 84 and 90 meet. It took me like an hour and 10 minutes to go 5 miles on that stretch. And I just kept thinking, this is 84's fault. And 84 is literally like Connecticut's infecting Massachusetts.
Yeah, so it's like a needle poking into the vein, the healthy veins of Massachusetts infrastructure.
Yeah. They just can't help themselves. 84 sucks. It's the worst road I've ever seen in my life. The fact
Yeah,
that some of it comes in, takes our beautiful pike, brings it to a standstill is offensive to me.
the worst road I've ever been on for an extended period of time is I-88 out in New West, like central New York. It kind of takes you from like Albany down towards like Binghamton. I used to have a friend that lived in Binghamton, New York, so I took it several times. It's the worst road in America from like a quality perspective. You just go over bumps for 2.5 hours. It's awful. Anyway,
Yes.
New Japan Pro Wrestling. We're coming out of the
Yep.
G1, and so
Yeah.
I wanted to have this episode because I wanted to be a little bit more of a discussion on the roster and some of the key current members of the New Japan roster. And I don't want it to turn into a Ghetto Should Be Fired podcast because I already had that podcast with Gerard DiTrollio, which was before the G1. And
Right.
all I'll say is I don't think Gato strengthened his case for job retention following the G1. And I also didn't really want to focus on like Evil and House of Torture because I think a lot of people are focusing on that as like the main takeaway from the G1. I wanted to talk about some of the other things that happened in this G1 and kind of what that means for the long-term aspects of some of these members of the roster that are going to be key members for for New Japan going forward. And obviously, I think the first person we need to talk about is Konosuke Takeshita. He wins the G1. We came into, I think every sensible fan came into the G1 saying, all right, New Japan needs to make a new star. They need to pick one of these young guys and give them a real steady push. And from like on paper, that's exactly what they did. They chose one of their young guys and they gave them a real steady push. But did they pick the right one? They picked somebody who is not one of their, core, young lions that they've graduated up. They picked somebody who's currently has two other contracts with wrestling companies. And I think most people seem to understand that his primary focus is probably going to be AEW. Certainly, he's probably making getting paid the most money from AEW. But in general, as a fan and as an analyst, what was kind of your takeaway from Takeshita winning the G1 and kind of getting that opportunity, as opposed to maybe one, some other options on the roster?
Well, I spent most of Sunday wondering whether I wanted to send you a message that said I'm not recording and I'm out and I don't want to talk about this company. Because Takeshita is my favorite wrestler. I have a very soft spot for DDT. I pretty much just watch New Japan and DDT. I believe that, it's not that they chose their best choice, or at least the choice that is the best. I don't know if it's the choice that fits the best. But part of that's also on them. Like, I was just so frustrated on Sunday with all of this clamoring for evil. And, now that Twitter sort of like auto translates stuff for you, I'm going through all this stuff. And it's like, I'd rather I just see the katakana and the kanji and the Japanese, because it was just so much of just the online New Japan fan, domestic fan, like the Japanese fan, just like praising evil for his heart and his whatever the fuck. Just simply because he's the homegrown guy. And I came up with a new word for all of this, FedRem. FedRem means Federation Reminiscent. Things that remind me of WWE fans. And I kind of feel like the company is being very FedRem, and their local fans are being very FedRem. The way to make a star doesn't necessarily have to be that they're a traditional babyface. And yet, Takeshita comes into the G1. He's got Rocky Romero, who booked himself into a prominent spot again. He's there as like the heel manager, the heel voice. And then he's kind of neutral throughout the whole thing. And then we get to the block final night. And he has this match against Narita, where he's playing this sort of underneath babyface that has to come from behind, and he's the limbs, and I know there's some talk about his limb selling and blah, blah, blah. I mean, Tsuji's limb selling was bad too, by the way. But, he fights his way through House of Torture stuff, and it's like, fine, it's a House of Torture match. They need to do something with Renda Rita because he really sucks. They gave him that match, and Takeshita had to fight. But then they did the exact same thing in the Finley match, where Finley had like 90% of that match, and Takeshita had to fight his way through and blah, 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 persevere and all that nonsense. Then he pretty much had the same thing in the Sabre match. More, it was more even in that match, but again, he's still playing this underneath babyface. And then obviously the evil match was just all of that. So I really don't understand why they took Takeshita, who could have become a star just as this dickhead who's bigger than everybody and stronger than everybody, and who's kind of, it doesn't necessarily have to be an invading heel, but that he's in there and he's acting the way he did last year, where he's sort of very supercilious, he's very sort of highfalutin about everybody, and he's just sort of looking down at New Japan. And instead, they want him to be this traditional babyface, and then they saw at the final, the New Japan fandom. Now, in the building, I think it was like half and half, but it seemed like online, everybody's for evil. So they built themselves up here where the fans are sort of being kind of FedRem themselves because they're just kind of rejecting somebody just because they're not the homegrown guy, which kind of reminds me of the sort of clashes we see here, dangerously coming close to sort of American wrestling culture with all of this. But I just don't understand. Like the instincts of this booking crew have just fallen off a cliff, because obviously they know who's going to win before they start. There's some sort of backwards plan. So if the idea was that you were going to get Takeshita winning this thing, why in the world would you do it this way? So I do believe Takeshita is talented enough to go through all this, but they've just totally mischaracterized him really within just a few weeks. And I just fundamentally don't understand how they think this is going to work or could work. It's kind of where I'm at with that.
It would have been interesting to see if they went with Takeshita in the finals against a non-evil wrestler.
Right.
Because I do wonder, on one hand, like, evil, to me as a fan of New Japan, like, evil has done absolutely nothing at all to make me invested in wanting to see him succeed at all. I would like to, like, probably never see him wrestle ever again. But that's just me. The domestic fan might be, or the remaining domestic fans might be really excited to see him win matches. I don't know. But like, what if he was like, what if they did Takeshita versus like Uemura or Tsuji or someone that maybe the like someone that would be like an obvious person that actually should win, as opposed to Evil, who everyone knows, like, even though Gato loves Evil, everyone knew Evil actually wasn't going to win that match.
Yeah, no, I agree. So, I mean, one thing I have been thinking for a while. I mean, I'm obviously there were people who thought this well before I did, but I definitely was seeing the signs earlier this year. Not so much when he went away after Tanahashi beat him, but sort of when he came back. And definitely like within this tournament, I really did think like if they just turned House of Torture face and didn't change anything, literally just the exact same things that they're doing, it would at least be interesting. But then, you know, we get to this final and it's the same nonsense. Which, you know, I'm higher on Evil since he got the laugh. You know, the laugh didn't exist last time we talked about this stuff. And the laugh is incredible. I'm fully in support of him with that. But like, you know, like if it was Evil in the final, or if like, you know, I don't know where the idea was. If the backwards design was we're gonna have Evil in the final, then Takeshita was absolutely the wrong choice. Should have been Tsuji, or especially Uemura. And if they like Takeshita's gonna be there, then they really needed to realign everything. And I think you're right. It should have been one of those guys. Either Tsuji or Uemura, or Shota, I guess, but probably Uemura or Tsuji facing him in the final. And then Takeshita should have been, you know, the character that he's been pretty much all year up until like the very end of this G1, and probably still won. I mean, I think you could still base things around him, but yeah, I think you're right. I think like it was just a totally mismatched final. And again, I keep coming back to the idea of instincts. Like there's all these self-immolating choices that they keep making, and they just fundamentally make no sense.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really want to talk about that much about House of Torture, but my stance for a while has been just, in addition to like, okay, these matches all have kind of the same format because the heels run in and cheat. And I mean, as someone that has been watching American wrestling their whole life, like, I just a formula that has been pervasive throughout all of American wrestling for as long as I have been watching it. And I just don't need to see that outside of, I don't need to see it at all. But one of the original things that got me interested in New Japan and Pro in general was not as many like American tropes. And then the other thing is just like, it's just not creative. Like objectively, like, these matches all have the same layout and they all have kind of the same things. And Kanemaru's got his whiskey bottle, and Dick Togo's gonna he's got his garrote wire and he's gonna do the chop off of the ropes, and Walker Stewart's gonna have to say dick to dick contact, ha 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 ha. And it's just like, that was just like every Evil match. So it's not creative. In regards to Takeshita, so there's been this thought process where it's like, okay, New Japan needs a new ace. And Chris Samsa wrote all about this, an article that went up today, Tuesday, as we're
Great
recording
article.
this, kind of talking about Takeshita as the new potential ace of New Japan Pro Wrestling. And these other, whether it's the Reiwa generation or other people that have been possible candidates for that role, you could say that there's been issues with them. Umino didn't have the charisma for it. Some of these other guys were maybe a little too green. But Takeshita is kind of, despite not being a New Japan homegrown star, Takeshita from a talent perspective is the obvious choice if you were to pick, okay, who's going to be like the next top star for New Japan Pro Wrestling? It's this guy who looks the part, who's a great, great in-ring wrestler, has tons of charisma, is young, but also very experienced. Is just an obvious, like, super slam dunk prospect that you want to build an entire company around. But the issue comes from first, and then you saw this during the final, and kind of you're talking about seeing people online talk about it and things like that. There's this stigma about him not being a New Japan guy and being a DDT guy, as a trainee and for a bulk of his career. And then also the fact that he's an AEW star and has, factored pretty prominently into AEW as well. And there's this general sense that this guy cannot really replace Tanahashi, because Tanahashi is like the heart and soul of New Japan Pro Wrestling. And this guy, no matter how talented he is, even if he gets really over, he's just not going to be the heart and soul of New Japan. Or that's what how, the way it seems. And that's kind of like a, I don't want to say unforeseen factor, but it's an extra factor with him that I don't think New Japan has adequately addressed. When you're picking, like, all right, who are we going to give this rub to?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, again, I think it comes back to I just fundamentally do not understand why they presented him as this heroic baby face when he's bigger than everybody else. It doesn't really suit him as well right now. And like you said, like he's only been in New Japan for a year. Even less than a year, right? Because we didn't technically know that he was signed when he started the G1 last year.
Yeah, like
I mean, I
officially
kind of think,
signed in New Japan for a year.
Yeah, I think that was like the big reveal, like after the G1 ended, right? And I think that's kind of overblown because, yes, he's not there every day. And like, it's sort of one of those things where you have enough fermentation on both sides to work where, he is not there every day. So the ones who are there every day and the fans who are behind them can draw on that. But he's there more than anybody else that does like the sort of two company, three company deal. I mean, he's been at every single major event at New Japan. He did the whole G1, so he's been there a lot. He just hasn't been there on the tours, which of course only one or two shows are even broadcast anyway. I don't know. I just think, with Takeshita, the one thing that's really kind of bothering me, especially, is that he's not coming from like if it was the opposite and New Japan sent somebody to DDT, obviously I think DDT fans would be rightfully upset because that's like punching down. But this is a guy coming from DDT. Like it's it, I love DDT, but it's fucking DDT. They produce these generational talents, but he's a guy from DDT. Like it's
And
not like somebody from All Japan,
yeah, and well, New Japan has a long history of picking up talent from other promotions
Of course.
that are smaller than them. And I mean, you can look at, Kazuchika Okada, who started out, working in Toriyama in the Dragon Gate system. And as soon as they're like, wow, this guy's really talented. Guess who was sniffing around and looking for him? New Japan Pro Wrestling. And I think, dating all the way back to like the first time I saw Takeshita, which is going back to those matches he had with Hiroshi Tanahashi when he was a teenager, I just thought, okay, one day this guy is gonna be in New Japan,
And I
because
mean, again,
he's
like,
so talented and he's so young, and New Japan gets those guys because they're the biggest fish in that pond.
Yeah, and I think I was talking to Joel about this the other day too, because obviously you think to yourself, he's tall, right? So he's really tall, taller than pretty much everybody else in the promotion, and he's buff. I mean, Okada didn't have that, but the idea is like, is he the new Okada? Which I hope he's not, because Okada kind of left the company in a lurch last year. Didn't help anybody. But like, I see that. But they're kind of skipping steps again. Like Okada's title reigns. I mean, if you watch those title reigns back, especially like the 3 year one from like 2015 to 2018, most of the matches he's getting his ass beat for most of the match. The crowd is behind his opponent, and then he just sort of pulls it out. But you accept it because it's Okada. Like you just accept that he's a otherworldly talent. But it took a long time to get to there. And this kind of feels somewhat reminiscent of what they did with Narita, where it's like, all right, here's your new Shibata without any of the backstory of Shibata. So I think they're doing everybody a disservice by doing this. And it seems like they're just writing themselves into corners by overthinking everything.
Well, the main difference between Okada and kind of that phase of Okada's career and where Takeshita finds himself now is that Okada was working, I think, with way better people. That even if Okada had the physical tools to survive when he's working against, I'll just throw out Minoru Suzuki as a guy, like Prime Minoru Suzuki, or maybe whatever you want to call that phase of Minoru Suzuki when he was like 50, but still very good. Like he's dealing with yes, he has the physical tools, but he's also dealing with like he's wrestling Tanahashi, who's a legend, and Suzuki and Nakamura, and these guys that were enormously talented, legendary wrestlers that were very, very good at their jobs. And Takeshita finds himself on a roster that just doesn't have that kind of depth and talent in terms of opponents, which also makes it more challenging, I think, to build them up as a baby face in that regard.
Absolutely. Well, and also, I mean, I don't want to harp on it unless you bring it up, but same thing that we were sort of talking about last year, and it's become exponentially worse. Obviously you're right. Like, I really love this roster, but the level of talent is tricky to compare. These guys are going to have to bring themselves up on their own. The guys who are still around that are like legendary talents are broken down. Also, let's just add to this, talking about aces. Tanahashi was a true ace. I mean, to me, he's like a jumbo, like that classic guy, because Jumbo was the ace, and then he passed it on to the Four Pillars. And Tanahashi did the same thing, built the company up, passed it on to Okada. Okada did not fulfill his ace duties because he purposely not only didn't even pass it on, he went out of his way not to. But the big problem to me, I mean, besides the pandemic, which is obviously, like everything that we're talking about is because the pandemic fucked everything up. But the factions, like, there's no faction element. Like, Okada was nurtured by Nakamura. And we don't have that. So we don't even have the support system for these guys to sort of like get boosted up. So it's just a whole maelstrom of stuff that's
Are
just
you
fucking everything up.
implying that House of Torture is not a good support system?
For who? For Narita?
Yeah, I know that I mean, House what House of Torture is, it was, I guess it's good for evil, but what I've said House of Torture is like it is a spot for people who they've given up on and are just like, all right, like in Gato's one idea, which is if your first push doesn't really take, is to just be like, all right, you're just gonna be like a super shitter heel now, and you'll be like one get yourself like some sort of prop or gimmick. And go run in different matches and hit your opponent with the, whether it's a wrench or a push-up bar or a whiskey bottle or garrote wire or whatever you want it to be.
I mean, when it works, but like most of the time, it's just so insincere. Like I adore it when it works, and I probably have Evil higher than anybody. I think he might have been like 10th or 11th in my match rating list. It works for Evil. Don't ask me about Naruto, and Sonata's like unrateable at the moment. But like, it's just like it's almost a mockery of wrestling. Like it's not even like an homage. It's like literally just shoving it in your face, like, here we go, everybody. It's fucking fake. And we're just gonna do all this stuff every single night. And like, it's just really dire when you see that group, especially like when you saw them after Chase and Folly joined, and then that night they come out with Evil, and you're just like, holy fuck, look at this group of has-beens and jobbers.
Yeah, just like growing with discarded parts like a junk pile. I made this point with Gerard was on my show, but I as I said, like the main interest for me getting into to Puro was, and when I would explain to people was like they take pro wrestling more seriously. There. It's not sports entertainment. It's not, you know, the it's the matches are treated as like this real athletic competition. And it's just a hard sell when House of Torture are as prominent as they are. It doesn't
Well, I
feel
think
like that.
I think
Doesn't feel like
prominence
a
is the key word.
real, yeah, it doesn't feel, yeah, if it's undercard bullshit, who cares? Because there's always been like comedy guys in the underneath and whatever. But when you were talking about like the closing stages of a G1 and it's like, oh yeah, we got to do the requisite five people interfere match, it doesn't make the promotion feel unique. It doesn't make it feel like a real competition. It's hard for me to say like, oh yeah, this is pro wrestling where it takes a lot more seriously. Oh yeah, here's like Dick Togo hitting his opponent with a chop to the balls for like the 500th straight match.
Yeah.
And just something that fundamentally I have a hard time dealing with as a fan. And honestly, like, I didn't watch a ton of Evil matches in this G1. I gotta prioritize my time, and I'm like, that's a skip. I watched more Narita and Sonata matches because I was a little bit more perversely intrigued by what they were gonna do. But Evil's been this guy
Right.
for years. Like, I don't need to see the latest Evil match the same way I don't need to. I don't know. Anyway.
Well, it's it, you know, and one last thing, it is a lot of just overthinking because and just a lack of common sense because, you know, Evil, you know, Joel was talking about this on his show, and we've been talking about this. He was 12th overall in like the booking strength, you know, like the average match ranking that we do. You know, he was 12th. Like he didn't have a semi-main, or he had some semi-mains, he had no main events. And it's just like, what are you guys thinking about here? Like, you bake this group of jobbers who's like the biggest faction they've ever had in their history, practically. And it's like, so we're supposed to be mad that these people are like exceeding their position or like that they're acting this way. But that just makes you like legitimately mad. I don't want to go like
You're right.
X-Pac heat,
They're
but like you're just mad and it doesn't make you want to watch anymore.
they
And then it's like,
the sorry. I was gonna say
I'm
there
sorry.
was really kind of no indication leading up to the G1 that like Evil was gonna get a big renewed push as a top guy.
No. Well, besides the Finley win, right? But like he beats Finley, which of course is all it's a whole other discussion there about why they had a faction versus faction thing
Right, they
and one
lose that
faction
faction
win.
versus yeah, they lose the faction versus faction match. And then like the House of Tortures, the consequences of that was like House of Torture only grew much, much stronger following that.
Right. And then their leader beat the other leader, which means they win the feud. So that was a whole waste of time. And then like you know, I've said this before. I'm just constantly gonna complain about it. I really hate it, how they've changed things. I just want my one match final. I want, you know, block A, block B, and a final, 3 days, none of this playoff nonsense. I think the playoffs hurt quite a bit. I don't think this would have been as bad if they just would have had two block winners. But then I also just don't care if it's predictable that I can look at the final night of a block and say, yep, it's gonna be those two guys. And then you look at the booking and say, yep. Those are two of the strongest book guys. Like,
There was
what are you actually?
never a problem before when we had really like
No.
well-booked G1s. It was never a problem. I was like, you know what? I probably think like Tanahashi's gonna win this G1.
Not a problem, right? You look forward to it because it's like, you know, the G1 is also like, I hate to sound like this, but it's like the process too. You know, it's a month, it's a grueling deal, you know, the whole thing. But like, why are you hiding someone in the mid card? Like, if somebody's booked like a mid-carder, they shouldn't be in the G1 final. And that goes for anybody. I don't care if it's Evil. If they would have put Oiwa, if they would have put Shingo, who was also 10th, even if they would have went with Umino, who, you know, besides a couple main events, was pretty low on the card as well. He kind of hid in the mid-card too. Like, yeah, if you want to put them there, book them like that. They don't have to main event like every night, but like, they should have some. There should be
Yeah, and
some
that's common,
distinction there.
like you said, that's common sense, right? Like if we're going to put this guy in the main event, let's make sure that there's some prominence going into their
Yeah.
process.
But I also kind of feel like they think Evil's kind of above that. And he might be, actually, because it just you can just do whatever you want with him.
Yeah. Moving on, I wanted to focus on some of these young guys. Let me ask you this question. Okay, the question is going to be, rank these guys based on how you personally feel they have the potential to be a top huge drawing star.
Ooh, okay.
Okay, so I'm going to give you these names and you just rank them how you feel.
Okay.
Yota Tsuji, Oiwa, Shota Umino, Ren Narita, Yuya Uemura.
All right, so I gotta admit, you know, again, I think with what you do and what I do, we both know, and it's probably been drilled into our head, that you cannot eliminate bias if a human is involved. I mean, I try to get around that by being, you know, whatever, but, you know, so expertise can only go so far, or attempted expertise. So I got to admit that I'm an always Uemura guy. I always will be. I thought he was the chosen one when he was a young lion. Okada really fucked him over because he did that drop kick on the way out, which seemed to be the christening that, oh, this is the guy. Okada was willing to do that, and he left. But I would put Uemura number one. Because, I mean, Uemura, man, I mean, everything he does, like this G1, really, I'm almost glad that he didn't make it out of his block because he didn't get caught up in all that nonsense. But I would say, keeping it simple, Uemura, Tsuji. See, I'm going to say Umino and then Oiwa and then Narita. So, Uemura, Tsuji, Uemura.
I think you'd be hard pressed to find someone that doesn't put Narita last, I guess, unless you're like a super Aminu hater, I guess. I was thinking
Yeah,
about
I
this.
mean,
Yeah,
the
I
only
was
thing
thinking about.
Naruto's ever shown me is he had that really great Super Juniors when he had to kind of fill in when Despie got hurt and Romu got hurt, but I haven't really seen it from him, even when he was in America. Like, I don't know. He might be, I think he'll get there. I think, you know, he'll be fine. I can say one thing is that, you know, I spend a lot of time watching the backstage comments, and I truly believe that you can see elements coming together back there. And Narita's backstage comments have been getting much better. I mean, he only says like two lines, but he's getting better, but it's going to take a while.
Yeah, I thought about those five guys, and I thought my list feels like I'd probably go Uemura, Oiwa, Tsuji, Umino, Narita, and one of the things I was thinking about was that's kind of basically a reverse order of how long they've been around,
Interesting, yeah.
and I'm concerned about that as a exercise because it's like the longer these guys are around, the more exposure they're given, and the more
Right.
exposure to the booking that they have, the lower their ceiling seems to be. And that's natural, right? No one has
A little bit.
a higher ceiling than somebody who's like only who you just saw their debut match and it looked good in, right? But there's something about the creative process over the last few years, and I mean, there's something about it. The creative process has been bad. Where for a guy, and this is where we get to Tsuji, I think, where to me, Tsuji has really good talent, and to me, would be like the kind of guy that I think is the closest to a complete package from a in-ring charisma, kind of marketability kind of perspective. But he's just been on the end of some not just bad booking, but just like boring, inconsequential booking. And it feels like his like people have said this, like they missed the peak with him. They should have just pushed him right out of the gate when he came back and he, you know, immediately challenged for the title. And maybe they should have done that. I understand why they didn't go all the way with him there. But what they've chosen subsequently to do with him over the last 18 months or so has not helped him feel more like a potential top guy, despite the fact that he, you know, he's had really, I think he's had some really good matches and he's done some really cool stuff. It's not like he's not like Narita, where you're like, okay, we're gonna have to go back to square one with this guy and figure out how to get his career back on track, or he's just gonna be an undercard guy forever. But there's something like Tsuji, like the longer he's been exposed, the more questionable he becomes, or the less hot he feels as a potential top guy. And like, I think part of the reason there was so much optimism for Oiwa, who I did think had a very strong G1, which he needed to have because he hasn't really done all that much since coming back to New Japan. But part of it was, look, we haven't seen Oiwa spin his wheels in place for 18 months the way we have with Yoda Tsuji, so he obviously feels like he has higher potential.
Well, I mean, with Oiwa, like before he got into the G1, he had defeated Yoshihashi, Kenta, and like Chase Owens. Those were like his singles wins,
Yeah, and
like.
he was like the fourth most important person in his stable.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you somewhat. I think what what I think is at play here is that, another thing about this G1 and why it's kind of malfeasance that it was evil there. And I, you know, again, I'm a staunch supporter of evil right now. I really did enjoy his G1. But, I want to keep in perspective that Uemura has been back for less than 2 years, like a year and a half. Oiwa's been back for like less than a year. Tsuji's been back for about 2 years. Naruto and Umino have been back for, about 2.5 years. But that means that like now is the time. Those guys have been back 2.5 years. So like they haven't been back too long, but they've been back at the point where you got to make a decision and you got to start doing some stuff. And my big thing that I'm going to be writing about, however long this friggin' article ends up being in my post G1 grading stuff, again, like these fundamental critical choices that they're making. Like the decision of what they could do and what they couldn't do. They had a choice, certainly coming out of the pandemic and with this influx of guys who, I'd have to go back and look, but I can't remember this many guys coming back in such a flurry before. Like, maybe it's been at least 20 years since they've done that.
Like a flurry of like real prospects too.
Right. Yeah. Because like Goto and Naito and Okada were like spread out, so you probably have to go back to the second Musketeers. But when I'm looking at what they did, one of the problems that I'm seeing is that there's all these changes that they've made, like these really like deep changes to like the armature of what makes the company work. So we're going to change the G1. We're going to have 28 guys. Now we're going to have 32 guys. Now we're going to have a playoff. Now we're going to have a six-man playoff with buys and all this fucking nonsense. And
We're gonna
then,
have four blocks, and one of them's just gonna be young guys.
oh, and then they're all going to lose to Sanada, who
Well,
doesn't
we're gonna
dress
put
like Inkasumi.
Hikaleo through.
Because, like, we couldn't see that he was fucking leaving. So, and I don't know, is he on TV? Is he
Yes,
debuted?
he's. I don't know if he's actually wrestled a match, but he has finally, after 1 year of apparently doing nothing, he's there, and he is going by the name Tala Tonga, in case you needed to know
Wow,
which one he was.
that actually happened.
Yes, he is on
Damn.
screen. I believe this. I'm not a regular WWE viewer, but I believe on
Oh,
screen
fuck.
his name is Tala Tonga.
Don't
You understand
want to
he's
laugh too
tall.
much. Yeah. I don't want to laugh too much because like I could just see that being like some sort of like Tongan name that has this rich culture, but obviously they just chose it for the pun. I did see like the last I checked, it was like Tongaloa was injured, and I'm like, well, fucking of course he was, but I don't blame him. He's fucking 40. Get your payday.
The
But
latest update on that is that Sami Zayn is kind of back in like the bloodline, trying to like
huh.
ingratiate himself to them. Like the same thing they did a couple years ago. We're now at that phase of it.
Right. Oh, Jesus. Which, by the way, like, I mean, that's what revitalized the company, by the way. I mean, fucking, I don't want to hear about
Oh,
Roman and Cody. It was Sammy.
you don't need to ex you don't need to defend that position on this. I've said this is the most anti-Roman Reigns podcast in the world. That's
I
not
love
like
Roman.
insane. That's not like
I
insane.
love Roman, though, but I it's just like it was Sammy.
Ugh.
Like it was Sammy.
You
It was
love what
generico.
you love Roman Reigns.
Well, I like Roman Reigns. I've liked Roman Reigns. He's competent. I mean, I had to endure like the Undertaker match and stuff, but I've come around to like Roman Reigns. But on New Japan front, they come back from the pandemic, they have all these guys coming in. They change all this stuff, right? So they change the G1. And then we're not going to have the winner of the G1 challenge at Wrestle Kingdom. We're going to have them challenge in the fall. Because I got to talk about that too later. The desperation that they have in trying to fill these gaps instead of just letting the fall play out like it normally does. Got to fill it with a title match that has consequence. And they're changing all of these structural things. But what they didn't change was the way they book new guys. We're going to bring them slowly along, and they're just going to join a faction, and then they're going to work their way through. They'll work a World Tag League. They're going to slowly work each other. They're going to slowly make their way towards the Never Belt or the White Belt. They'll have, 4 and 5 records in the G1. All right, we're going to expand the G1 so they can, like, get these meaningless achievements of making them out of the block, even though They didn't win the block and all this stuff. And what it really shows to me is that they are desperate. Number one, they're desperate to just like draw a house, whatever they can. And it's not working, obviously. But they are desperate to do anything they can to truly commit to these guys. Everything they've done with these guys has been half-hearted. So instead of changing the way that they book new wrestlers, especially with so many coming back within the short time frame, they were more willing to change the system than to change the booking to give these guys the opportunities they needed. Because you're right, Tsuji is the greatest example of this. And again, as an Uemura fanatic, I don't want Tsuji to succeed more than Uemura. But I have to look at this objectively. They've given Uemura more than anybody. He comes back and he challenges for the title at Dominion. Main events Dominion. He wins the New Japan Cup. He makes it to the G1 final. He challenges again with his faction leader. All of this, and now he's got the white belt. Held it for 6 months before he lost it. But all of this stuff is just meaningless. It's all cursory, surface-level drivel. He lost all those big matches. He never main evented a card when he had the global title. He was always working underneath Tsuji. You know, and, you know, in the moment, it didn't feel like he could have or should have beaten Sonata, or beaten Naito, or beaten Finley, or whatever. But, like, it's the same thing. Like, it's all this half-hearted stuff. They're not willing to commit to these guys. And they're willing to just, like, change the format, change the system, instead of just putting these guys out there. And I'm sure you're going to bring them up, but Shota's the greatest example of this. Changing his whole character, having him be this mopey Hamlet walking around for almost a year before he shaved his fucking head and then instantly came back and almost won the New Japan Cup. Look at last year. If you knew that you wanted Shota Umino in the Wrestle Kingdom main event, then you should have just had him win the fucking G1. And haven't stopped moping about Moxley, because I was there. I was one of the few in the Lowell Memorial Auditorium watching him at that show tell Moxley to go fuck himself, and the crowd reaction told you everything. They just wanted to see this guy be assertive. He should have won the G1, went to Wrestle Kingdom, and lost. Then he could have his meltdown. But they didn't want to do the traditional thing, so they changed the system because, for some reason, they didn't have enough faith in one of these guys to just stand on his own and either fail or succeed as a G1 winner in the Wrestle Kingdom main event. And I think that shows a profound mistrust they have in themselves, that they don't even feel like they could pivot if these guys don't succeed. Just the whole thing is just set up for failure.
Yeah, there's a frustration I have with, like, the 50-50 booking that they've gone with. And I argued with somebody on the Voices of Wrestling Discord. I apologize, I don't remember specifically who it was, but they said something along the lines of, like, this entire G1 was built around, like, crowning Tsuji. And this was, like, right after Tsuji lost to Evil in kind of what was kind of a stunning match.
Yeah.
And I said, like, I mean, I kind of pushed back on that because, like Tsuji went 5-4 and, like, barely scraped into the playoff for his block.
Right.
And, like, I feel like it felt like when we got to the playoffs and we got to the semifinals and it was, you know, Zach and Takeshita and Evil and Tsuji, I think a lot of people were like, well, Suji's got to be the young guy that they picked to put over. So it kind of, there's some momentum. It's like, all right, it's Suji's time. And then, like, he loses to Evil. And it's like, so they really never, they didn't really give Tsuji that much more than they gave any of the other young guys outside of Takeshita in the G1.
Right. In this one, yeah.
Yeah, and I have, there's two big issues here.
By the way, Jesse, it's the exact same thing they did last year where he just barely makes it out of the block.
Right. They're not pushing these guys like, oh, they go 8-1 or whatever. And they're just
right.
Like really, really dominating. And I guess that transcends to my, I didn't include him in this list because I think he's a different case, but Bolton Oleg.
Sure.
Okay. Big Bolton here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big fan. I think he has done a really, really good job coming along as a overall performer. He's obviously got great size and athleticism. I enjoy his matches. I think he, when I see him in the ring and I'm like, all right, this is the kind of Puro that I enjoy, right? Big physical motherfucker that's gonna suplex people and it's gonna be great. And he has the issue, I think, specifically because of his athletic background and his physical presence, where it's like, this guy, if you're gonna feature this guy and he's any good, which they should and they do, he should not, he cannot be someone that gets 50-50 booked. He cannot be somebody that is, you know, going 4-5 in his G1 block. Or I think he went 5-4 and not making the playoff. Like, if you're going to have a guy that looks like this and you have aspirations to push him, you cannot have him being booked just like he's like any other wrestler on the roster. And it's not necessarily because he's more talented than those guys, but because his appeal should be just historically based around this guy's a huge, powerful, tough motherfucker, and he's probably going to win most of the matches he's in because of that. Because this is a combat sport, and the bigger, athletic, more skilled person wins most of the time. And
And he has
like,
the actual pedigree.
right. And he, of course, and that's a big thing too, especially in Japan, where it's like, okay, this guy is a legitimate fighter.
Because we got one of those coming up in January.
Yeah, well, he's. I'll get to him later. He's. I think he's. Yeah, he's even a different. Well, it'll be funny if they. I mean, it won't be funny, but if they book him the way they book Bolton, that'll be interesting. But so you have this guy, and it's like they ha he wrestles Tanahashi, right? And they have a nice little match. I enjoyed it. You know, Tanahashi's, you know, trying his best, and he gets Bolton on the ropes, but then Bolton's just a little bit too big, a little too strong, a little too young, and beats Tanahashi. It's like a, I don't know, I think, I don't really rate matches, but I think it was like 3.25 star, 3.5 star match. Nothing wrong with it, right? I was like, there's another school of thought where it's like Bolton's wrestling Tanahashi, and Bolton just absolutely destroys Tanahashi. Because the message is, oh, this guy, Tanahashi, he's a legend, but he's on literally his last legs. This is his last G1. I'm a giant athlete in my prime, and you don't even deserve to be in the ring with me, and I'm gonna beat you in like 4 minutes. And I think that would be like an aggressive move that would also send this message where it's like, this guy isn't just another guy on the roster and just another mid-carder that's, you know, going 500 in the G1. This is, oh my God, this big, strong, powerful guy that everyone on the roster is going to have to reckon with, because he's probably going to win the world title, because who could possibly beat this man? And that's just like simple, traditional, fundamental booking that just seems lost. And it's like they book Bolton like he is, you know, Roy Oiwa. And I like Oiwa, but like, those guys shouldn't be booked the same. Like, I joked about this in the, I was looking this up. I was looking at Vader in 1988. And I was looking at like his results, and he didn't win every match he was in, but he lost, you know, he would work these tag matches and his partners would lose. But I'm sure I didn't go back to look at all of them, but I'm sure he wasn't dropping many falls in 1988. And I was thinking, like, if Gato had 1988 Vader, he'd have him like losing in 13 minutes to David Finlay in like a hard fought G1 match.
Yeah,
And
and
it's
you know
just like,
what? The Tanahashi, retirement G1 retirement tour here was ripe for like one match. I think you're right, because I remember some people were like speculating like maybe they could do something like that. It was asking for like one match where somebody just puts him down, because you could do that in the G1.
yeah, it wouldn't like to me, Tanahashi wouldn't lose anything by doing that. And because they didn't really want to have him that much in the mix at the end, and they were kind of telling a story where he's like gonna struggle to get his 100th career G1 win, and that's kind of what he's gonna be focused on. Like, and Bolton won the match, so it's not even like a result would change. It's just a like stylistic choice for how you want to present these young guys that you're presumably going to be counting on to carry your company.
Of course. Yeah, and I think with Bolton, I somewhat agree with you. I mean, I think they could go a little bit faster. I think I'm fine. I'd like to see what he does with the Never Belt now that he's got it.
Yeah, he's
But I
not
do.
ruined. Like, he's not ruined or anything like that. I'm just tossing
But
it out
he is
there. Like,
32. He is 32.
hey,
He's
Right,
older
he's
than
maybe not
you.
as young as you think he is, but that's I mean, the way
But like the
people,
idea is like you gotta do something with him soon. Like in 2026, you've really gotta like push him a certain direction.
it
Because
just
he
to
is
me,
getting much better. He's improved greatly. And he's improved backstage too. Like his talking has gotten significantly better. Like he's ready to prime to break out.
And I just think when you have someone with those with the physical size and physical tools, they require a level of they require a level of like attention to how their matches are being laid out in terms of projecting dominance, because these kind of guys are rare. It's rare to have a guy with that size, with that athleticism, that has, I think, been a fast learner and a quick study. Like you can't like You got to take care of those. You can't book them the same way you would book like other guys. I use Oyua as an example, but just like any of these guys, like I just feel like there's more. You're booking a monster in a way, and they need to do a better job than that. The other thing I
Well, you
want to
know,
mention.
sorry, one last thing about like kind of branching off what you were just saying real quick. You know, I've done a lot of work going through the G1. I've gone through every single result, every single scenario for the final nights. I've done all this friggin' work for nothing, essentially. Like, if you look, there was that period where they were like really hot in the late 2010s and the matches got longer. And then during the pandemic, they just had to do long matches. And really, ever since then, it's kind of been a monotonous deal, right? Kind of like what you were saying, like every match kind of feels like it's in the same time frame. You know, it kind of feels the same. And even if you go back just to like 2011, 2012, you see like different matches, like matches that end in 5 minutes or whatever, you know.
You can look at a G1, any G1 this year, and be like, I know how long roughly each match is going to go based on where it's slotted on this card.
Of
Like the
course,
first opening G1 match is going to be like 7 or 8 minutes, and then they're kind of going to get progressively longer until the main event.
and you know, to be honest with you, the funny thing is, I think more people are going to remember that Drilla Maloney ELP match than probably would have. Obviously, people just despise ELP for some reason, but like that match is like 4 minutes, and people are like, "Wow, that was interesting." You know, like they used to do it. Bolton would be a perfect example of that. His matches, you know, only go in like 5, 6 minutes, either direction. And then every so often, you know, you break out that long match with them. But yeah, I think you're right about that.
The other thing, and I want to touch on this. You mentioned we kind of talked about this in a few different ways already, but I think that there's when and we talk about like making one of these young guys, giving them a real strong push. I think there's an issue where there's kind of a fundamental lack of hierarchy within New Japan that used to be there during the boom period of the 2010s and in previous eras as well. But like. You had like this kind of first class group of talents, and you could say at one point it was like it was Tanahashi and it was Nakamura and it was Okada, and it was like I think like AJ Styles got in there, like basically whoever people that were good enough to hold the IWGP World Championship, and then Nakamura leaves and Naito rises up and AJ leaves and you replace him with Kenny Omega. And then there's a couple other shuffling with there. Will Ospreay gets into it. Jay White gets into it. Kota Ibushi gets into it. But you kind of have this like first class group of these are the top guys. And these top guys are pretty much never going to lose signature big singles matches to anybody else on the roster except other people in that top class. And it was a nice kind of informal establishment of who are the guys who have truly made it, who are the guys that are in this top class of New Japan wrestlers. And if you are excited about an aspiring young wrestler, what you should be looking at as a fan would be, oh man, I hope like if you're a big Uemura fan, like your goal should be, I hope Uemura can one day be in that class of the absolute top guys in New Japan. And I think over the years, a lot of it's due to talent loss and guys getting older. But a part of it is most of it just comes down to bad booking. They just don't have that hierarchy anymore. It seems like everyone on the roster, and a lot of that's because they passed the world title around a lot. And it just feels like you don't have that hierarchy. So if you're looking to build someone like a Uemura or like a Tsuji, like, who is there on the roster right now that if Uemura were to beat them in a big singles match, that would feel like a firm establishment of, okay, he's now at this level. I think that maybe that's the plan with Takeshita, to kind of use Takeshita as that kind of tent pole and the measuring stick, and then eventually
That's
someone
confusing.
beating him. I think may like the only guy like Zach maybe is a guy I would say is like, in terms of like someone that's been protected enough that a younger guy beating him would be a big deal. But other than that, the rest of this roster just is comprised of guys who don't even feel who don't feel close to that level. And that's a major loss when it comes to the current state of New Japan, but also if you're planning on elevating guys in the future, you don't have those you kind of let yourself not have those top guys that can be used to make new top guys.
100%. And I think it comes back to what I was saying before. Chris does a lot of work with this stuff too, about like, as he's mentioned this a lot about how like hierarchies and like, going into a G1 that it's very rare that, the second guy in a faction is going to be higher than the first guy, right? So, you look at a faction, you're like, all right, so we know, Okada's going to finish above Goto, or Kenny Omega's going to finish above, whoever from the Bullet Club's in there. And I hate to keep harping on this, but like, I'm a big believer in the factions. I think last time I was here, I talked about how, WWE was super hot a year ago. And I was like, it's probably because they committed to longer title reigns and they committed to more factions. And all of a sudden, you notice you start putting people in factions and people start getting more personally attached to this stuff and more invested. As New Japan went away from that, the tossing the title around. And then like you talk about like, oh, so AJ Styles leaves, Kenny Omega slotted right in. Kenny Omega leaves, Jay White slotted right in. When Will Ospreay left, obviously he wasn't ready for it then, a year and a half ago. But just they should have just said Callum Newman's the new leader. Just say it's happening. Because, it's not like these guys were ready. I mean, Kenny Omega had kind of a rough stretch there, after he took over the Bullet Club, right? He's in ladder matches with Michael Elgin, and they were great matches, but it's like, he's getting hurt. He come into the G1 kind of cold. I think they just like, I understand what you're saying, but I think the guys are there. They're just not presenting them that way. Tsuji doesn't even have a fucking faction right now. They're doing this fucking unaffiliated gimmick, which is way too goddamn abstract. He just should have taken over for Naito. Newman should have just taken over United Empire.
Well,
I like what they're doing with Uemura. Uemura is like the new Tanahashi. He'll take over Hantai, but like, we need that structure.
I mean, my fan theory was I wanted to, like Tsuji should have just like beat the shit out of Naito and said, "I'm taking over this faction, bitch," and that's how Naito exits the company. Which I know people love Naito so much that maybe that doesn't go over as well as it does like when I say it out loud. But I was like, that would be a direct like, okay, this is we're really going to be seriously elevating somebody. Instead, he's kind of like twisting in the wind.
I actually think people would have really liked that. I don't know
It
if
would have
it
been a
actually
really
would have.
aggressive. It would have been a really aggressive booking move, but that's what this company needs, I think.
Well, because like, with all the things that they've given him, and they've at least presented Tsuji as a solid main eventer from the very beginning, Tsuji is at least the one that has the most fan support. So I think that would have been a really interesting thing to do. I mean, I haven't even talked about Tsuji wearing the fucking pudding guy all over his gear and coming out dressed as the pudding guy and talking about the fucking pudding all the time. Like that hasn't
You
helped
want to,
either,
what
I don't
was the term
think.
you used? FedRem?
FedRem, Federation reminiscent.
That sounds very FedRem to me.
Like he comes like, he comes out dressed as the guy, and I know that he's an actual, character. Like Joel pointed that out to me. Like maybe it's just Philip Marlowe. My response was like, Tsuji doesn't read. He's just talking about the fucking pudding guy. And it, like, the guy's on his gear. And by the way, it's flan. That's fucking flan. It's not pudding. But the Marlowe pudding. Like, it was funny at first, but it's on his fucking gear, Jesse. How am I supposed to take this guy seriously? He should be at least leading a faction right now.
Yeah, I think I mean I'm kind of I'm not I like the idea of factions. I think that a lot of these factions in New Japan have hit their expiration date a long time ago. And
Oh,
I
yeah.
would really be a fan of like a Dragon Gate style restructuring of a lot of them. And I think like,
Well, I mean, listen, I mean, the factions that we know of, like Chaos came out of turning on the Koji or not, Tenzan. Like, a lot of these factions come from just the dissolution of another faction.
Right.
Like,
And
it's, come on.
Chaos hasn't had a real strong direction in years. It's always been kind of like Chaos, and eventually it kind of merged with like Hantai and like just kind of like the generic, like all the baby faces are going to be in this faction for the most part.
Right.
And then you have Bullet Club War Dogs, which is again the Bullet Club is just been around for over a decade now. And you have House of Torture, which also kind of derivative, but also like House of Torture has been around since the pandemic, right? So that's 5 years.
5 years now, yeah.
It's like so it's like you got those guys have been around forever, and then you got LIJ or like the husk of LIJ. And I understand like there's merchandise and like why would if you have like the Bullet Club at LIJ, like why would you want to give up potential merchandise with those are now brands. I almost said I told Gerard this, but I was like, I feel like they're like almost like sports teams. Like the players change, but
Sure.
the teams stay forever. And even that's like okay, but I would just like to see like I mean, I guess they tried with just four slash just five guys, but like
What
maybe
was
try
in
a little bit
it?
more than that, but maybe that's they're doing the that's something that's going to be in the works going down the line. Seems like kind of what Tsuji's doing is maybe a tease of what that's going to be in the future, but it just seems like they need a refreshing of those things.
I mean, how much merch are they actually selling? Like, you've seen the numbers of these shows. Like, most of these shows were abysmal. I mean, they did less than last year
I've
in
been told that
total.
House of Torture is selling many, many t-shirts.
They may percentage-wise be selling a lot of t-shirts as far as what's being sold, but like, there's not enough people to sell to right now. Like, this year's G1 was running bigger buildings, like there was a higher total capacity because some fucking loser that looked at this stuff. And like last year, they had more people in smaller buildings. This year, ran slightly smaller, bigger buildings, and they had less people. Like it's going the wrong direction.
Hey, you're
And
really
like,
making the
I don't
most of that
want
work from home time, huh?
to. Oh, Jesus. I can't. I would never been more happy for a G1 to be over. I swear to God. But like, it's just like, because I don't want it to be like all negative, because like the pieces are there. I really think like this a ridiculously talented group of guys,
There are a lot of people on the roster I enjoy seeing, for sure.
and I love. We haven't even talked about the junior division. I mean, I loved the Super Juniors. They fucked up that booking at the end too. But like, there's a lot of stuff that's going on right now that's been good, but like, just looking towards the future, and you're just like, it just doesn't seem like there's a vision.
Something else I wanted to mention, this really became apparent, I think, throughout the G1. But it starts really with Goto's world title reign and kind of the momentum that builds up around Goto earlier this year. And there was something about, Goto, because he's just got this level of experience and there's like this physicality to his matches and the closing stretches. And I was like, and as his contemporaries have either broken down or left the company, it was like, Goto just has something that these other guys don't. Like this kind of old-fashioned charm in his matches that I think the younger generation has struggled to emulate. There's something about Goto's generation that they were just naturally better than that. Kind of like how you'll see guys who like were not really anymore because there's almost none, but like 20 years ago you would see like, oh, that's a guy who worked the territories in the US. And you can
Sure.
kind of just see like, oh, you can see he's got like I guess Jeff Jarrett's a good example. Like Jeff Jarrett has some like just Memphis showmanship and working punches and things that are like trademarks of like this dead style that you only see in a handful of wrestlers. And it feels like Goto was doing that. And then during this G1, the two guys who I don't think people were really expecting that much of in the G1, which are Yoshihashi and Tai Chi, to me demonstrated a similar kind of appeal that Goto was, which is like these
Right.
guys, Yoshihashi and Tai Chi, like they have this They know how to fire up at the right time. They know how to lay it
Yep.
in. They know how to do these things that I just don't feel like the younger guys are doing at this kind of consistency. Now, part
Yeah.
of that is like
Okay.
with all three of those guys, Yoshihashi, Taichi, and Goto, these guys are really experienced. They're all like 20-year pros. And in all three of
Right.
their cases, they're probably underrated throughout their career, overshadowed by flashier, more talented people. So it makes sense that they are. When you take when you when they, when you take away they're no longer competing with like Okada or the flashiness of Nakamura or any of these other guys, like that these guys kind of stand out a little bit more. But there's just something about their matches and the way that they I think a big thing is like the way they work their closing stretches and the way they know
Right.
how to fire up just like that last gasp of firing up before they're finally put out. And maybe it's just experience. Maybe in 20 years, all of the, Reiwa guys have that as well. But there's just something about that generation of, it's probably not a great thing that I'm like, Yoshihashi is one of the only guys on the roster that still gets it. That's
Right.
not
Well,
entirely what I'm saying, but there's something that stands out about those guys compared to the current generation, and I don't necessarily think that's like a great thing.
yeah, I 100% agree with what you're saying about those guys and what they do, because Yoshihashi, he even, I mean, unfortunately, like, Yoshihashi had a good couple G1 years, and then he just had some really bad ones, and then he had to go. But, like,
Yeah,
when
and
you
I'll add, I am a longstanding like Yoshihashi enthusiast, and I've always kind
Oh,
of enjoyed the underdog G1 Yoshihashi story, and I
Oh,
enjoy
sure.
it pretty
And
much every year.
yeah, and since the pandemic, he's been amazing, right? When you see in his matches with Tai Chi too, you saw this year, like, they seem to understand what you need to do to make a G1 match. So, like you were saying, like, knowing how that end game should go to get the crowd really excited. Not doing it every match, but Yoshihashi's like the genius of a little bit more, right? So, like, you expect the G1 match to end, like you were saying, kind of it gets monotonous, or you kind of expect it. There's 100 matches in a month. You think the match is going to end here, and then it goes like that little extra step. There's one extra chapter to the match, or if they're not going to have that, watch the matches with Yoshihashi and Tai Chi where they don't go that extra level. It's only like 8 to 9, 10 minute match. They make the most of those minutes, right? They're not fucking around. They're not going crazy either. It's very exquisite what they do. And there's two matches I want to highlight related to that. In fact, they both include Oiwa. Some people like this match. Probably most people like this match. I was like almost legitimately offended by the Oiwa Newman match because, like, it was just a nothing match. It just existed, for however long it went, like 7 or 8 minutes, whatever the fuck. And 10 minutes, 10 and a half minutes. And I just thought, these guys were having like a medium level match, and they didn't do anything, expressive. They didn't do anything to sort of grasp that moment, right? Where it's like these two young guys, they got to do something memorable. And they didn't do anything memorable. And I thought both guys had great G1s, but it's just like, what the fuck is this? Like, you guys just wrestled for 10 minutes, and like, I was expecting more. On the other hand, and a lot of people have pointed out this match. I mean, this was the match of the tournament for some people. Oiwa and Uemura, they were calling their shots on the backstage comments. Uemura literally said, "We're going to show you a wrestling that you haven't seen. We're going to show you the future of this company." And that match was fucking amazing. Like, and it was just straightforward. It was very traditional. It wasn't like super ambitious, but it was just like profound. And I just look at
That's
that,
my match. That's my match of the tournament, and will be
Was it?
probably be placing in my at a current standing is a good stance of making my 10 match top 10 of the year, I think.
Yeah, and you know what? I talk about how, like, Uemura is my guy. So I'm always rooting against Tsuji because I want Uemura to get there and higher and whatever. But I do like Tsuji a lot. But Tsuji does like a lot of cool stuff. But like, there was something about, I mean, there's some things that just doesn't land or just comes across flat. I mean, his fucking finisher is a spear. But That
We
Owen
need like we need
Warakula.
more guys in wrestling that do spears. I think there's a shortage. I think we
Jesus
need like
Christ.
10 more guys should be using the spear as a finish.
Like you got the like somersault one that Drilla does, and then you got the lifting one that Hanari does, and then you got another lifting one that what's his name does.
That's just in New Japan too. Like
Oh.
it's just anyone that ever played football does a spear, and that's just a rule. Fuck you, Bill
It didn't
Goldberg.
even work. Like it worked for Edge for like 6 months, and we've been cursed with that fucking thing forever. You know, and the
Yeah,
funny
well,
thing was,
Goldberg is a spear guy, I feel like.
Goldberg's fine. Goldberg
Yeah.
can do it. He's
I
done, right?
also
Or he's...
I also enjoy Rhino's spear.
Of course. But
Yeah.
like it kind of ended with those two, right? And actually, you know, funny thing, did you the Newman Tsuji match, how flat that match ended because Tsuji ended it with a different move, that whatever the fuck that was, that little DVD, whatever it was. You saw that, right?
Dude, all that stuff, like you're talking about specific matches. Like you mentioned the was it Oiwa Newman match, and I was like, what do I have any strong? I'm like going through my notes and I'm like, I don't have anything on that match. I'm like going through cage match. I'm like, I don't remember
You
this match at
should
all, so
have.
I have no strong opinions on it. The
They didn't give
Uiwa
you anything.
match, yeah, the
But
Uiwa
go back
match,
and
it's
watch
great.
the end of the go back and watch the end of the Tsuji Newman match, because like this is like a block final, you know, it's a third match, but like, you know, one of these guys is going home, and Tsuji hits him with whatever the fuck that move was. But like he had, the crowd had no reaction because he hadn't done that move before, which is really weird. Like, you know, I think it's cool that guys who don't usually get falls and stuff have gotten a lot of them on this tour. But like, if Tsuji was gonna win a match with that like caliber and those much stakes, right? With that much consequence, he should have been winning like every night with that move.
Yeah, he should be
Same
laying
thing.
out people in the multi-man matches with that move.
Same thing with Takeshita with that fucking action movie neck snap thing and then his fucking chicken wing. Like, you know, he should have been winning some of these undercard tags with it too, to really get it over. He kind of got money clipped.
The money clip. Hey, he got that money clip. Shingo Takagi got that money clip over,
Oh, he
in
sure
that
did.
match. That's like I should go back and watch that match. That's like a legendary match in my mind.
Oh, yeah, where he's like frothing at the mouth and everything.
Yeah, I mean Shingo's the best. He's the best at selling stuff like that. Real quick, it's because I kind of want to wrap this up as my 30 and up basketball game is looming. I gotta stretch out the Achilles, stretch out the back. Two quick things. They bring back two young guys at the end of this tour. We get the return of
Yeah.
Oscar Lube?
Loiba.
Loiba. Yeah, that's right. I was doing a French thing, but he's German.
German.
He might be Austrian. Who knows?
With his Avatar The Last Airbender tattoos, by the way.
Do we need more of those?
I don't know. I've never seen it in wrestling. If you look at his arm, he's got like all four nations on his arm. So I'll always support him.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know this about them, so I'm probably gonna. I mean, I'm intrigued. I like tall guys. I'm intrigued by them anyway, just as a wrestling fan. So I'm always been kind of like a fan of Oscar. So they bring back Oscar and Yuto Nakashima, who is doing in like cl this is like this is classic Japanese pro wrestling where he's doing like a 2000s rapper gimmick kind of, where that's at least how it seems like he's dressed. They're I guess gonna be the main tag team in the War Dogs. I don't know. What did you think about them bringing these guys back? I'll tell you what. I remember like almost nothing about Yuto Nakashima as a young lion, and I have not been closely following his excursion.
Well, Yuta was kind of hamstrung because Uemura broke his arm in like his debut match, just on a scramble, and then he kind of came back and he was very like straightforward. He was kind of like, you know, never coded, so he was constantly like he
Yeah, I
was
mean, he's
like
a
the
young lion
brawler,
too,
but
so there's not that
right.
much.
You know, but he was like, you know, kind of like a shooter type. Or at least, you know, like I know that's his background too. So I'm not sure. Like, he certainly committed to the body language. Jesus fuck, he's coming down the ramp doing that. I mean, I enjoyed it. I guess I probably should have seen it coming because Finley was kind of hinting at it. But I guess they fit in War Dogs the best. I mean, we don't know what the War Dogs is going to look like. Like, is Gabe, how long do we have Gabe for? I mean, I've heard people speculate that he's going to AEW. Really hope that's not the case, but if
Oh
that
yeah, we
is,
haven't
then
even mentioned Gabe, which I don't really want to talk about him that much because I don't have that much to add on Gabe Kidd currently, is what I'll say.
I think like he could have heated himself up, because like if I was looking at the way they structured his matches, the way all the way through, it looked like he was going to have a very, very strong first half where he was going to face Zach and Takeshita and all them. But you know, unfortunately, this guy's you know sent a snake bit as well, because you know of all the times to get hurt, especially coming in as the secondary champion. But no, I'm looking forward to this team. You know, the only thing I hope that, you know, whenever we see people come back as teams, I always get a little reticent, just because like we saw what that did to Sho and Yo, where you know, and it could have just been the makeup of Sho and Yo, even though I love Sho. Like they come back and then they're just like they're a tag team and they never break out of that. Whereas I think that there is a lot of singles potential for these two, but it's just a bizarre thing where it's like I can't remember a team coming back, or even a team even forming, where there's such a dichotomy, like there's such a clash between the two characters. Like we see that with like you know the tag team that can't get along, right? The fucking Heyman special. But I've never seen a tag team that actually comes fully formed as a new tag team with totally mismatched characters.
Right. These aren't established characters on
No.
our television screen. It's like we're introducing you to the new Oscar, and we're introducing
Right.
you to Yuto Ice, which is he supposed to be like Vanilla Ice? Because that's the vibe I'm getting.
He's, I mean, I don't know. He kind of looks like whenever I see like hip hop presented in manga, where you're kind of noticing like, which doesn't make any sense either, because it's like, you know, Japan has a pretty productive hip hop culture and they have for a very long time. So I'm not really sure why they always go to sort of these stereotypes, but
It's because Gato is like Vince McMahon, and his stereotypes are like 40 years out of date. So we're gonna,
you
if
know,
we want a hip
listen,
hop guy, we're gonna get a hip hop guy from 1991.
I don't want to put it all on Gato because I don't know who's actually doing
Yeah,
what.
that's
But I
that's
definitely want
fair.
to say, like, if New Japan Booking was a person, you would definitely be wondering if you should make the call to assisted living.
Yeah, I mean it's one of the it's very it's hard to say because again I think Gato takes a lot of flack because we don't but we ultimately don't know who's here and who's there. Obviously, New Japan's had its challenges with going back to COVID-19 pandemic, guys getting older, the very competitive wrestling environment for talent. Because I mean I said this before like an under really underrated part of the 2010s. Japan boom is especially in terms of just getting their hands on pretty much every cool Western wrestler that
Right.
was
Yeah.
around
Right.
because WWE and TNA would like didn't have any real interest in these guys. So like they were able to
Right.
have the Young Bucks for years and years and years and Kenny Omega and you know any top British wrestler like Will Ospreay or before him Marty Skrull or any of these guys you know, Devitt, like because they had carte blanche, and obviously that totally has gone away.
But you know,
But
Jesse, all this stuff, like everything you've said is valid and it's 100% true. But how does any of that explain the decision to turn Doki heel? You know what I mean?
oh
Like,
yeah, and
there's
like
no
we,
excuse for some of this stuff.
and if you watch other promotions and particularly other pro promotions and a lot of I am not a Stardom viewer but a lot of people have pointed the irony of how well Stardom has handled losing some key talent and rebuilding compared to New Japan given that they're both owned by Bushiroad. There are we've seen other promotions that have far fewer resources that have dealt with a lot of issues and they've been at least you know, you can quibble with like, well, they're not that successful because they're not drawing that well. But I feel like from a momentum perspective, we've seen them be able to build new stars and things like that. And New
Sure.
Japan, you know, it's a bigger stage. It's probably harder to get over New Japan than it is when you're wrestling in, you know, Shinjuku face and you're wrestling in front of smaller crowds. Might take a little bit something extra, it might take longer investment, might take more charisma to project outwardly. It's not a one-to-one comparison, but we've seen other companies be able to find a better success in creating a new wave of talent than New Japan has, and a lot of that
Sure. Yeah.
has to do with that. The last thing I want to talk about, just real quick, do you have any thoughts on Aaron Wolf? Because I don't, but I find the increasing conversations about him kind of interesting, in the sense that a lot of people
Yeah.
feel like he's being presented as like, oh, well, he's going to be a savior. Like, I even heard, and I don't know how serious this is, but people perhaps joking, like, oh, well, Wolf is going to be the main event of Wrestle Kingdom or something like
Yeah.
that, which I find hard to believe, but who knows? I just find, go ahead.
Well, no, I do have thoughts on him. Like nobody, okay, so nobody reads my stuff. Nobody, people listen to my stuff because I'm on, actual popular people's podcasts like yours. Although they used our podcast last year as a punishment. I don't know if you saw that. That
Who
fucking
used?
Discord. The
Oh,
JCast Discord. But
they
the
used
funny
the
thing was,
podcast as a punishment?
yeah, there was some bet, and the punishment was he had to listen to our show, which I don't know. Like I said, I don't know why they're so hard on for you, because obviously nobody cares about me. But the funny thing about that was, by the way, that he had to like describe it. He had to like give a like a live response thing, and like he was like, ah, this is a good podcast. So it ended up turning in our favor, I guess.
Yeah,
But
that's always funny to me, because I don't know, I find my takes relatively benign around New Japan, but
that's why
nah.
I think it's just because you don't write about New Japan as much. So they were like, oh, what does he have to do? He just writes about the fucking American wrestling. And then it's like, oh, no, it's a good podcast. But so Aaron Wolf, right? I think it's been very interesting how they've had him strategically ringside, but not always ringside. I think it was very unfortunate that they did that little TV spot that people spread around where he was like running the ropes with Nagata. Because he's a big guy, right? He doesn't look like he's in shape right now. But like he's always been a bigger guy anyway. I mean, he was a big judoka.
Yeah, and he's not gonna look like Bolt in the league.
No. But I do somewhat worry about that because like talking about FedRAMP, you know how WWE for the longest time, until kind of Brock, but even they've done it after, like, I mean they did it to Chad Gable forever. Like, if you have actual credentials, they did the opposite of what Japan does, right? Where it's like, if you have actual credentials, like Chad Gable, a legitimate Olympic wrestler, Greco-Roman, but he was at the Olympics, they just treat you like fucking trash. They just want to, like, put you down. They gotta humble you. When like, you don't even need to. I can't keep. When Great O'Khan had the, or he was going for the KOPW, if y'all remember the KOPW, I thought like
Worse.
he lost a wrestling match, like that amateur wrestling match, which he lost to Yano, which I know they like to talk about Yano's background, but Great O'Khan was a Japanese national champion. He's not losing to that fucking fat old man. And then they had him lose an MMA match to Shingo, which is like, how the fuck am I supposed to watch and believe this is at least engaged with it, thinking that Shingo Takagi, who I'm sure is a tough guy, could beat Great O'Khan, who literally like promoted the match with like a room full of these fucking trophies that he's won. I don't think they're gonna do that. I think they're gonna really present him strong, right? I've heard rumors about who he might face at Wrestle Kingdom. Like I was saying, like nobody pays attention to me, but I do talk to the people that people talk to. There's some interesting stuff out there. I just worry, like, he may be the savior, but it's not going to happen immediately. You know what I mean? Like this idea that, like, I was old enough to live through Kurt Angle in real time. Kurt Angle was not a polished thing, right? The idea that Kurt Angle was his prodigy from day one, he was a prodigy from, like, day 100. You know what I mean? Like, it took him several months to get to be the Kurt Angle. And then, like, he was just instantly great. And maybe Aaron Wolf can be that. I hope he is. But it's they're gonna have to be careful. Because like you were saying, you definitely don't want to overexpose this guy.
Yeah, I mean, I find the takes on him, like you said, there was the clip of him running the ropes. There's clips of him with his pictures of him with his shirt off, and it's like, I find the people already ushering takes on him like interesting, just because like this guy just hasn't had a single match. We have absolutely no idea how good this guy's going to be. I think what he's going to attempt to do is extremely difficult, which is jump into presumably a very prominent spot in one of the biggest wrestling promotions of the world in the world. Without having any experience, which is like insanely hard to do. So I wish him the best of luck. I think it's going to be, I'm fascinated to see how he's going to shape out, but it's hard for me to like wish cast anything on him. And I've heard people say, oh, well, he's going to be the new ace. And it's like, the guy hasn't had a match yet. He can't be the new
No.
ace. But
No,
because I
and I
think,
don't.
but I think because of the lack of star power on the roster right now, the focus, whether good or bad, is going to be more on him because of that.
Oh yeah, 100%. He's going to have expectations that are beyond what he's capable of. I do want to stress though, I mean, we've seen people in the dojo. Like I he's gonna look good. Like I know he looks kind of out of shape now, but I kind of feel like we're just jumping on that. I kind of feel like all this training he's gonna get back. I mean, he was a fucking gold medalist. Like he's been in shape. Like he's gonna be in shape.
Yeah, I'd be very surprised if he goes out there and he's looking like one of those like barely trained WWE like warehouse women's wrestlers that they have. Like he's going to go out at Wrestle Kingdom and probably have a very safe, well played at well thought out match to hide his strengths in or hide his weaknesses and promote his strengths.
Yeah, and I think.
How does he look 3 months from now? That then is far more important.
Right, and I think I'm always interested because, like, I think in America, it's constantly like. I mean, I know WWE's trying to break through that, but, like, it's always traditionally been amateur wrestling background, and even in Japan. So I'm always sort of interested because I find judo wrestlers who have a judo background very interesting. So I think, like, with him, because he's just so famous. And he's so famous for a specific athletic thing. I think it's like, you know how when Tai Chi does the thing where he does the sumo thing and he tosses the guy and that gets a big reaction now.
Yeah.
I could see those judo throws. Like, I guess it would, well, actually, no, Ronda Rousey.
Yeah, I was
Like, what
going
am
to
I
point out this
thinking?
sounds a lot like Ronda Rousey.
What am I thinking? Yeah, Ronda Rousey. It would be like that. And I was there in at MetLife Stadium when she main evented WrestleMania at that like 9-hour WrestleMania. And like,
Yeah, I think you're still there. You're still waiting to for that Uber to pick you
Jesus
up.
Christ. And I got like we got out of the stadium and I was on the highway within 5 minutes. Like I don't know how I did it. 'Cause I know nobody else did. But no, I think it could be a Ronda Rousey thing. And like say what you will, that was very exciting before like she came back and it was awful, but that first run was really exciting.
Yeah, and it goes to like and one of the things that WWE has become very good at is WWE is very good about like taking untrained people and putting them into situations where they look like cool for the most part. And they did a great job with Rousey laying out her matches and doing all of that stuff for her. But they've done it with people with far, far less athletic ability
Right.
or natural instincts than Ronda Rousey. And so I wonder what New Japan's approach is going to be. Like I said, like I imagine the Wrestle Kingdom match is probably going to be like a really well laid out match where he's going to be, taken care of for the most part. But how will he look, in March when he's working in a tag match on the undercard? Like how is that? That's far more interesting in terms of what his ceiling is going to be than if he could have like a 4-star match or whatever at Wrestle Kingdom and like really impress people and be like, whoa, this guy is a natural.
Right.
And then 6 months from now, being like, well, it really didn't come together for him.
I just hope that he like I hope like what you're saying. In fact, that's exactly what I was thinking, that I hope they just let him like just make him look cool. 'Cause we saw how that's worked for Tsuji too. Remember how weird he looked when he was a young lion? Now he comes out, he looks cool besides the fucking flan pudding nonsense. I
I'm
just
getting
hope he doesn't
hungry
like
now that was tough discussion. I'm gonna go get some
Paul,
flan
my
from the from the from
Paul.
the Takira that's down the street from my house.
My wife is glaring at me to make dinner, but like, I hope he doesn't go. Oh, we're gonna he, like gold medal judoka. He's gonna come out wearing a gi and he's gonna wrestle in a fucking gi like he's fucking Yoshida or something. Like, you know, I want him to like be a real wrestler. So I hope they haven't done that. I mean, it's not like I'm basing this just on fears that have no foundation, but
Yeah, like
like.
it's gonna be like Enokiism is gonna make a big resurgence, and he's gonna be like doing these like work shoot fights in the main event instead of just being like a wrestler.
Yeah, we're already close enough to Enoki-ism level houses. Like, let's just steer the course and work with what we got.
Yeah, I mean he's a fast I mean he individually is a really fascinating person, in terms of, you know, his background and his I mean his shoot name is Aaron Wolf, which is fucking
Oh,
awesome.
amazing. Yeah, and I mean, he's probably like the most famous guy they've had on the roster. Like, probably only since Makabe, but Makabe got famous after he became a wrestler. So,
Makabe kind of became famous after he was like kind of washed already, right? Because he was doing like these
yeah.
Monday these he was became like a figure on like the Japanese equivalent of like the Today Show or something, right?
Yeah, it was like this Gap Mode deal where he loved sweets and stuff. So it was like, oh, look at the, you know, big burly gruff looking guy, but he loves sweets and chocolates and stuff.
Didn't Manabu Nakanishi have a very similar gimmick where he just like ate a lot of food on TV?
I don't know. Nobody cares about him anymore.
No, but he was eating like he'd have like the monster breakfast and he would be like eating a bunch of food, and I believe that he rode that to celebrity status. I mean, he was a very highly regarded amateur wrestler.
Right. Yeah,
Right.
it's really, I mean, we don't even need to talk about like they forced his retirement. Now he's like working at a gas station or something. Like, what the fuck?
Is
Poor
that true?
Nakanishi, man. I just remember like after he retired, his dad was like, they asked his dad, and he's like, "Oh, you know, he's fine," but he like didn't praise him. And I was like, "Oh, he's one of those dads." But I remember something where he worked somewhere, like he was working somewhere where I was like, "Why isn't he in the dojo training
Yeah,
guys?"
he's got like a sad shoot job instead of like, I don't know. Yeah, I mean his retirement. I mean it was time for him to hang it up, but anyway. Jay, you got anything you want to plug?
I don't think so. I mean, I'll be
You've
writing
got your
a.
yeah, you've got your big G1 recap coming out, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping to keep that to just one column, but I don't know. I've written like I keep track of like how much I've written because I've always wanted to write, but I never did it. So like, I kind of view it as like a I don't want to say a dream come true because it's fucking wrestling, but
Yeah, it's a dream come true.
It's a nice thing that I've done, and I enjoy writing, so it's nice to be able to write publicly. I have published 93,000 words this year so far. I'm hoping I don't break 100,000 with this new one, but I will be doing, grading the wrestlers and grading the booking, which is almost certainly going to get a D or an F, grading the attendances, which definitely is getting an F. Just giving grades to stuff. Which, I didn't do it
Yeah,
last year, but I did it the year before, and that ended up being kind of like a like examining the state of the company too. So I kind of wonder if it's going to take that route too, just because, once the G1's over, you kind of feel like you're assessing where the company's at, where it's going forward. So probably that. I don't know.
I don't know if you can call it your writing columns. Columns would imply that it takes up one newspaper column, but I would
That what
say
it
that
is?
your article, well, I mean, yeah, that's why it's called a column. It's because it would be
Oh,
like on the side
I didn't know that.
of a paper, and it would be one column. But
Oh, yeah,
I don't think your writing would fall into that.
I
You'd
swear
have
to
like
God,
a
every time I sit down, I try to write a column, like you say, and it just never comes out that way.
you got to write more frequently.
That's true too.
So if you have a thought, that's a column instead of like 20 thoughts being in one story.
I
But
know, I
you
think for
write how
me
you
it's
want to
like,
write.
oh no, it's just like, yeah, I do have those thoughts all the time, but then I'm like, yeah, that's not enough for a column. And I think for me, like an article is like, I'm not gonna write it unless it's at least 3,000 words. And then I never end up writing it.
Well, I'll say there's no one that writes about wrestling like you do. So I would take that as a badge of honor. I think your writing is a very unique experience with a lot of insight and a lot of knowledge, but written in a very distinct way that we need more people doing stuff like that and less people making soy face reaction videos to AI produced content, which is where we're
Well,
headed as wrestling analysts.
not me, never. I appreciate that, Jesse. And I never really talk about, because I don't really necessarily watch the stuff that you write about, but I always end up liking what you read, and I especially like how you just piss people off. I mean, you just get so much reaction. People get so furious with some of the things you write about.
I don't
And I'm just
interact. I
like,
don't get these. See, I don't see these interactions, but I have liberal use of the block function in the Voice of Wrestling Discord at least. So maybe I'm getting
oh,
all.
definitely.
I'm allegedly getting all this heat, but as someone that was, like I say this all the time, like as someone that was originally a columnist and I wrote probably, I think I did some math. I think I wrote over 2 million words for Wrestling Inc. over my time there.
Oh, nice.
But dealing with the Wrestling Inc. comment section, like which would be
Oh.
like dealing with like Raj Geary's Twitter replies now,
Yeah.
are basically like how I grew up writing about wrestling. So criticism does not bother me.
No,
I would have stopped a long
very
time ago
much
if it
admire it.
did.
No, I admire it. I really do.
All right, well, thanks a lot. I want to thank J. Michael for being on the show. I want to thank all our listeners, and I'll talk to you again after a while. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Andrew Rich, and if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now, you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collins, and I am the host of the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, a show right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we take a deep look at individual issues and stories that are going on in the wrestling world. Each episode is about a different topic, and we take a thorough and educated look at things ranging from current booking trends to breakdowns of individual performers and angles to investigations into different fan cultures across the industry. In addition, we keep a close eye on the wrestling media, and as a professional journalist, I bring a unique perspective to how current issues in wrestling are being covered and discussed through the wrestling media. We have a revolving series of guests from across wrestling punditry joining us on each episode, and we hope that you make the choice to give us a listen on wherever you get your podcast from.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply in-app only.